Hey, do you want to join in on the excitement live? Join me every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. on the Chevy Dude YouTube channel. If you can't make it, check out your favorite podcasting platform at 6 a.m. Eastern Time every Wednesday morning.
This is Beyond the Showroom, where you'll learn tips and techniques on the car buying process, how to get the best deal, what scams to watch out for, and much more. Here's your host and one of the foremost automotive business experts in the country, the Chevy Dude, Mike Davenport.
And hello, welcome back to Beyond the Showroom podcast. I am your host, Mike Davenport. I am here with my wife.
Hello.
Your name is?
I supposed to say Andy?
Yeah, you know, tell people who your name is. You know, people who are not watching the stream and listening to the podcast in their cars or on their dogs or
This is
our second one, right? We'll get better. Everybody gave us great comments last week about how great it was and, you know, positive stuff that this was our first one and it looked really good. So,
and I keep you on task.
You do keep me on task. That's very, very helpful. So this week's podcast and live streams on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. on the Chevy Dude YouTube channel. And then podcasting audio uploads are going to be at, I believe, 1 o'clock Eastern time on Thursdays. So I'm going to push them up there. So let you guys tell me if you want to see them at a different time, but we'll do it at the same time every week, uploading them to the podcast software. There's a little bit of behind the scenes work to do on that to get them all out there on the podcast. If you want to text in your questions during the week or during the live stream, it's 502-909-5192, 502-909-5192. My name is Mike Davenport, one of the top salespeople in the country for Chevrolet, top Corvette salesman. I actually sell more Silverados than I sell Corvettes, but everybody knows me for Corvettes. And this week's topic is all about credit. So some of the things that go on every single February, every single March, is the fact that people are buying cars with their tax refund. You ever buy a car with your tax refund?
Do I get a tax refund?
I don't know.
I don't work.
No, you don't work. This is a job, right?
Yeah, but you don't pay me.
You know. No, I guess I don't, do I?
No. I haven't had a tax refund in, well, let's see, I haven't worked in at least 6 years.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And those taxes didn't really help us out much.
No.
So a lot of times people definitely go after it. And the information I heard, because I'm not into the tax refund bracket, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, but that stuff's been delayed. And this is why this video has not been pushed out at the end of January or the beginning of February, because it seemed like that child income tax returns have been delayed and whatnot. So with that being said, I wanted to come out and do this tax refund sale, the scams to look for, things to do when you have bad credit, stuff like that. And you might be surprised that I might tell you to not buy a car with your tax refund. Car salesman telling you not to buy a car. Is that smart?
Well, is it ever smart to say not to buy?
I don't know. It's case by case basis. Yeah, definitely honest, but case by case basis, really. So getting into this, there's a couple different types of credit scores. So there is a FICO score, which 90% plus banks and credit unions and lenders out there use to determine if you are creditworthiness, if they're going to loan you money, or based off of what type of rate you're going to pay. And do you know the other type of credit score there is?
Crickets.
Yeah, I don't know which one that is. I can't remember which one. So
it's that bottom purple one.
This one? There we go. Crickets.
I have that one. I know it.
So it's called the Vantage score. Most people don't realize that there's all these different types of credit scores out there. There's Vantage score, there's FICO score, and Vantage score is only used by about 10% of the lenders out there to determine your credit worthiness. Well, with that being said, probably close to 100% of consumers who look at their credit report are looking at a Vantage score, and it's not the right score to look at when it comes time to see, hey, I've got a 700 credit score. I got a 650 credit score, whatever the case may be. So you're saying
Credit Karma and companies like that use the VantageScore?
They use the VantageScore, exactly. Yep. So they use that. And there's a vast difference between out there. So to kind of give you an idea and a rundown on this, people with a 300 to a 579 credit score, which is a very poor rating, to 16%. People in the fair category, which would be 580 to 669, is 17%. People in the good rating, which is 670 to 739, is 21%. And then very good, 740 to 799, is 25%. And exceptional, FICO is saying 800 to 850, is 21%. So, but on an auto-based FICO score, they actually go up to 900. So pretty much anything over 800, you're got exceptional credit score. And
you're golden.
Golden. Buy whatever you want. Probably could lie about your application if you have a job or don't have a job or don't make money, do make money. You know, it's crazy what they look at. So really similar stuff with the VantageScore. So VantageScore 300 to 499 is 5%. Poor credit 500 to 600 is 21%. Fair credits 13%, 601 to 660, and then 661 to 780 is 38% is good. And then the VantageScore 781 to 850 is 23%. So that really tells you, but both of those, looking at those, you're still looking at over 50% of people having good credit in this nation. But that still leaves a vast majority of people to not have good credit. So Peter just asked, is 499 a good rate on a new car? It is a good rate on a new car, depending on your credit. So prime right now is usually in the fours. Can we get in threes? Absolutely. Can somebody's going to be out there like, I can get 2.99 at my credit union, right? I get it. Everything I do and talk about with interest rates and credit scores and stuff like that, it's not set in stone. It's not something that we have to go by or whatnot. It is simply to go off as a informational piece. So with that being said, you know, everything is a case by case basis. It's not something that we can sit there and go through the process and be like, well, Mike said it was this, or I listened to this person and said it was this. You know, it's everything's case by case basis.
Well, and your bank's going to determine what your interest rate is when you purchase anyways. So it doesn't matter what is put out there, because once the bank look at your credit score, they're going to sit there and say, well, this is what we want out of you.
Right. Yep. You're absolutely right. Return for our money. And do you know, I don't know if I really talked this much about around you, but do you know what I tell people or tell the kids how to use, like, a Credit Karma or a third party reporting agency? What's the proper way to use that?
Informational.
Yes, you're dead on. Good job. No crickets this time. So,
just good information to keep an eye out on, you know, basically if for some reason something hits your credit report that shouldn't be, you can know that ahead of time and take care of it.
And handle it immediately. And it just happened to me. It's something popped up on my credit report that was not mine. Apparently another Mike Davenport or something, but I handled it the next day. It popped up on a Sunday and I'm like, what is this? And Monday morning at 9 o'clock, I was calling this company and they're like, oh, this isn't you. We'll take it off on our next update. And I'm like, okay, so you're not going to show it as paid or disputed. You're going to, like, literally just delete it off my credit report, right? Yep. Okay. So I contacted these people, got their names, got all their information, all that stuff. And it took 30 days, but it got off. And I wasn't really worried about it for 30 days because nothing was going to happen with my credit score for 30 days, right? So now I got a Corvette coming and I'm going to be using credit to finance that car. And so that was my concern. And that was my concern I addressed to them. But I knew for 30 days back in January that my car wasn't going to be here in January. So it wasn't too big of a deal because Corvettes didn't start production until February.
Well, and we all know that, yeah, there are plenty of other Mike Davenports out there. You're the only one that puts yourself out there on the internet.
A couple here and there.
Hey, you have a customer named Mike Davenport.
Oh, I do. That's right. I almost forgot. So let's talk about, get into the subject a little bit more depths with that intro into the credit stuff and whatnot. Some tips and tricks to look for in the event that you have that 650 or below credit score. Really, 650, you're probably going to get good financing terms, not have too many problems, stuff like that. But certainly 610 in the 500s, less than that, there's some things to watch for. There's some things that you can get in some big trouble with. And I think my personal opinion is to keep away from a buy here, pay here lot, right? Use a buy here, pay here lot as an absolute last resort. I mean, that's
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those places, they don't report to your credit report. They don't help you because they want to enable you to stick with them. They want to enable you to stick with that 21, 22, 23% interest rate. So I've only sold cars in Kentucky and Indiana. That's the only things I know. 21% interest rate is the max that you can put in Indiana. And in Kentucky, the max you can do on a new car loan is 18%, I believe is the number, and then 23, 22% on a used car. So, but there's states out there that's like 35%, 80%. They can do whatever they want in some states. It's crazy. So those buy here, pay here places, they want to have you come back. They want to repo that car from you and then sell that same car back to you, get some more down payment, all that stuff. So, and then also kind of shy away from those independent dealerships that are focusing on credit repair, focusing on people with bad credit. And you can kind of tell those with a lot of their tones. A lot of their tones are like, hey, $1 delivers, $49 due at signing, you know, your signatures, your audit, you know, your down payment.
Yeah, no matter what your credit, we can get you bought.
Yeah,
you know.
$3,000 over your trade, use your tax money as a refund. We're going to finance, we'll do your taxes for you, all that stuff. Those things are like huge signs that they're going after the market of subprime lending. And the subprime lending is a huge market, right? And you can do it ethically. You can do subprime lending ethically. And another big sign of those independent dealerships that are focusing on subprime credit would be the dealerships that do not post their pricing. And I say this all the time, do not buy a car from a dealership that does not post their pricing online. If you have to put your information into their website prior to getting information on the car, on the pricing, anything like that, you might as well just go somewhere else. Not against independent dealerships. I got a lot of friends who are independent dealerships and they do fantastic jobs, but they do it ethically and they do it professionally and they're transparent on their pricing and whatnot. So you got to be careful. Those are some things to look for and to be careful on to make sure that you don't walk down that rabbit hole and whatnot. Another one is you can get pre-approved, right? You can sit there and go to Capital One and get pre-approved. That's Capital One is a great subprime lender. There's some pitfalls of going to Capital One and doing that because if they approve you and you go in and you find other stuff, they're not going to be any lenience on it. So you could find a Capital One diamond dealer and go straight to Capital One. And none of the people that I talk about are sponsors. They're not paying me. This is, again, my personal information that I have from working 20 years into a car dealership and working every single day with people with 400 credit scores, with people with zero credit scores, people with 800 credit scores, 900 credit scores, all that stuff.
Somebody says, if they don't have the sale price available but have the payment, the problem is with that is they're going to possibly be ballooning the actual price in it just because the payment's where you want it. So if you want a $400 payment and they can make that happen, but you may be paying $30,000 for the car because you're doing, what, 6 years, 7 years, you know, whatever they're trying to get that payment at.
Right, right. And just so you know, $30,000 car is going to be like a $600 payment.
I know.
With excellent credit.
I am just throwing numbers out.
This is what's great, right? This is what we talked about last week is, you know, I do this every day. I live and die by this and you live through it vicariously through me, but you don't know the ins and outs and know that stuff. But that's good because a lot of consumers don't realize that's going to happen. And then you throw subprime market into it. That $600 payment on a $30,000 car is going to jump up to an $800, $850, maybe $900 payment, depending on interest rate. So,
And if you're subprime, you shouldn't be able to afford that type of payment.
That's not necessarily true because it's amazing that you have people that making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year or a month. and they don't pay their bills. I've seen it all. And that's
just crazy.
It is crazy. But I also want to make sure that people understand that I don't look at anybody in any different ways because of their credit score. I don't talk down to anybody. I'm not making fun of anybody in any way, shape, or form. All this information is things that I see daily. And I love doing this, and I love showing people the right things to do and how to do it. So there's really like two or three things to be ready for when you're wanting to buy a car if you have subprime. And the number one thing is you got to be open-minded. You have to be open-minded. I see so many people walk in to a dealership and they have blinders on and they're like, I want this Silverado and I need it at $400 a month. And it's impossible. You can't do it. So you talk to them and you find out that they just walk out of the dealership because they're mad, because they're so closed-minded and they have this goal in mind, and whatever they've done in the past doesn't warrant them to buy the vehicle they walked in on. And guess what? They're still being open-minded. They just don't realize it yet because they're walking out of the dealership to go to the next dealership and find something else. And next thing you know, they go to a Dodge dealership and they look at a Charger or something, you know, and they're like, oh, we like that Charger. We were just over at the Silverado, the Chevy store, looking at a Silverado, but wow, we really like that Silverado because we're all visual people as human beings. So do you have any idea on what three goals would be to be open-minded? Just one of them.
One of the three goals to be open-minded
when you walk into a dealership if you have subprime credit.
And where's the crickets again?
All right. So the three things that you want to keep in mind is when you're being open-minded walking into a dealership is, one, we want to get good, reliable transportation. That's first and foremost.
Oh, you're talking about those three things that you always tell every customer.
Now do you know?
See, you know.
Did I ask the question wrong? Was it my fault?
Open-minded. That means being open to anything, not having set goals. So basically you want the three goals to getting a vehicle when you have subprime credit.
I'm just glad you didn't blame me for asking the question wrong.
It's always your fault.
So get, you know, our three goals for being open-minded is get reliable transportation. That's first and foremost, is get that reliable transportation, because that reliable transportation allows us to do our family things. Most importantly, gets us to and from our job to pay for bills and to make money for our family and stuff like that. And then allows you, when you're open-minded, allows you to stay on budget much easier. I think you said it perfect, you know, $30,000 car at $400 a month. People just don't do the math, right? And then it also, most importantly, it rebuilds credit. So one of the things that I always tell people is very open-heartedly and open, just being candid about it, is when you pay your bills, you tell me what to do as a salesperson. When you don't pay your bills, I tell you what we're doing. And that's just based off of my knowledge of what the banks are going to approve, what the banks are going to do, all of that stuff. And that's super important, again, to be open-minded about it. So with that being said, you know, when you walk into a dealership, and the number two thing would have equity into it. And I just saw someone say this, they said 25%. It's a dead on number. It's a great number. 25%, bare minimum 10%. Okay. So you got to realize when you're buying a car that you may have 5, 6, 7, 8, 10% in taxes and fees that goes over and beyond the purchase price of your car. So now you've got a car that's $20,000 and you're adding 6% sales tax on that and the dealer fees and title fees and stuff like that, and you don't put any money down, and people want to blame us as in car dealers of why they're screwed over, why they have negative equity. It's not us. It's you. It's you that didn't put the money down to put yourself in an equitable position. You're already going negative in the hole when you buy a depreciating asset and then you're adding on sales tax, tag, title, license. And so now you're losing 10, 20% in value on a car, but you've added 6% or 7% or 5%.
So question for you, can I borrow $20,000?
Who are you? What's your name? Do I know you?
I hope.
What are you doing in my house, lady?
I would like to buy a car. Can I borrow some money?
Well, if you're buying a $20,000 car and you need 20 grand, it's 100% down. It's
no, pretty, no, that was my equity. 20% down.
Oh, you're scaring me now. You're scaring me.
I'd like a $100,000 car,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the I'll find you a good salesman to work with, okay?
Yeah, I need a good salesman. My last one didn't bother to show me the car at all.
Just said, here you go.
Yeah.
Which car was that?
That was on the Corvette.
The Corvette. Yeah, I made you drive off the showroom floor, not having to drive a stick for a while. And
yeah, I hadn't driven a stick in, what, probably 15 years?
Probably. You're aging yourself. And don't say that number.
And you made me sit there and drive the Corvette right off the showroom floor, but and put gas in it.
Oh, yeah, I did make you put gas in it, too. Because
you couldn't even bother to put gas in
it. No, because I didn't want to drive it. I was doing, it was a surprise. And
oh, is this where you say it's my car?
Oh, I made that mistake, yes. So back to the equity thing. You're supposed to keep me on task. We got off tangent there. So back to the equity thing, you know, 10% down would be the absolute minimum down. And, you know, if you don't have money down and you walk in to buy a car, okay, I get it. I understand 100%. But we're talking subprime. So 10% down is a huge number. And that only gives you 3 or 4% equity right there. And you don't really have any equity. But that only gives you a 3 or 4% buffer of equity. 20% down is a great number. 25% down, as it was said earlier in the comments, fantastic number. Anything above that is only good for you. The reason we want to do that is it allows you to get better approvals, it allows you to get approved. It just simply, plain and simple, allows you to get approved with the money down. That makes the banks blind sometimes. I've gotten a 400 credit score bought on a car because they had a huge amount of money down, and the banks were just blind. It's crazy how the banks do that. So allows you to get better terms. So having maybe you're on a little bit older car, maybe you're on like a 7 or 8 year old car. Typically speaking, sometimes the banks are only going to let you do 24, 30 months, 36 months, which would make your payment really, really high. So with that being said, if you've got that money down, maybe they'll let you go 48 months because you're in an equity position. And that allows you to have that lower payment. So you get better terms. So also allows you to get a better car. So say you got 3 or 4 grand down. So when you look at a $10,000 car, it's 30%, 40% down, right? So, but maybe you can look at that $15,000 car because those $10,000 cars are usually higher mileage, 80, 90, 100,000 miles. So now we look at that $15,000 car that maybe have 30,000 miles. So do you think having that 3 and 4 grand down, you can do the math on that other $15,000 what that 3 and 4 grand down is. Do you think that puts you in a better position to have a car with 30,000 miles rather than 100,000 miles? Because then you don't have to worry about maintenance. You don't have to worry about something breaking down. You don't have to worry about after expenses. Does allow you to buy a warranty typically with a 30,000 mile car. And then most importantly, number four, allows you to trade early. So maybe we're being open-minded, right? And you did not get to pick the car. I had to pick the car. So, but you don't like that car, but it gives you good, reliable transportation. It allows you to build your credit, gets you into a payment you can afford. And so now you don't like that car, but you want to get out of it. The typical car dealership would say, oh, just come back and see us in a year. We'll trade you out of it. That's the stupidest lie I've ever heard in the day of my life. It's a scam. It's a fraud. You can't trade out of a car in 1 year, assuming you're just going to make all your payments as scheduled. You're going to make 12 payments, right? Really, you're only going to make 10 payments because you have 30 to 45 days of your first payment, typically speaking. So so really, you're only going to make 10 to 11 payments. And there's no way that you have the equity position. So my take on, what do you think? What do you think the position should be for someone to trade? How much should they pay their loan down?
Well, if they're not wanting negative equity to be trading into something else, you know, at least 50%.
50% is a good number. Yep, I agree with that. So I think you get to the 60% range, 60% of your payments. You know, you can kind of look to see where a three-year-old car, say you're buying a 2020 Malibu, see what a 2017 Malibu is on wholesale and retail. And be like, okay, well, if that car is worth 10 grand, I need to take my payments to 10 grand. So if you're doing a $20,000 Malibu, okay, well, I need to pay this car off to $10,000 before I trade, because that's going to have us kind of breaking even. And you always got to kind of look at the trade-in value, because again, I always like to overestimate, and I guess maybe that'd be underestimate. But I like to just make sure that I have a buffer in everything I do. I don't ever want to tell anybody something and have to backpedal in my day-to-day business and say, oh, wait, hey, your payment's $500. And then I have to come back and tell them $520. If I tell them $520 payment and the payment's $500, we have a positive conversation. If I tell them $500 to $520 payment, or if I tell them a $500 payment, it comes out to $520, then we have a negative conversation. And then the wheels go start going off your head. Is this guy trying to scam me? What's the deal here? The unknown happens. And when the unknown happens, you hit the brakes and you make sure that you're doing the right thing, which it was just a simple mistake, but there's no simple mistakes in the car business. People think, which is good. So, along with that, every special finance manager, subprime manager out there is going to love me for this. You have any idea what it could be? I hit this button too many times. So, so that is bring your documents. Oh. Bringing your documents is huge for subprime stuff. So if you're doing subprime stuff and you want the easiest possible way to do things, bring documents with you.
See, we're on a topic I am not the most familiar with.
Yeah.
So
I know this is great.
You know, I'm over here just being crickets.
All right. So, you know, documents that are absolutely so important with subprime deals is having all of your information up to date. Doesn't matter if you moved yesterday or moved 6 months from now, a year ago, whatever the case may be, six months ago, a year ago. I can't talk now. But were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, okay.
I was just waiting to find out what you're trying to say.
Yeah, I'm going to spit it out, I promise you. So just have all your stuff up to date. So because a lot of the banks will want to see that stuff and they want things up to date. And most importantly, when you go to the DMV and stuff like that, all that stuff has to be up to date. Have, you know what POI stands for?
Point of interest.
That's a good one, but not in the car business. We don't have any POIs in the car business. That would be proof of income. Could also stand for proof of insurance, but typically speaking, POI is proof of income. So bring your POI with you. Have access to your POI. POI is going to be your most recent paycheck stub, not one from 6 months ago, not one from 2 months ago, your most recent paycheck stub that you have. If you change jobs or your company changes payroll companies, happened this year to us, they changed a payroll company this year. Make sure you have your last paycheck stub of the old payroll company and your most recent with the new payroll company. That could mean a difference. So you want to make sure that you have all the information up to date and then also bring your POI with you. If you're a 1099 employee or you get some type of government subsidized income, Social Security income, child support, stuff like that, bring proof that that happens. Typically, that's bank statements. It's going to be 3 or 4 months bank statements, not go into your checking account and put and print out the ledger that you have there, going in, downloading your 3 or 4 page documents, printing those out and bringing those with you. 3 months, 4 months is huge on that stuff because the banks do make you prove it. If you tell the bank that you make $2,000 a month, they're going to say, prove it. And, or the dealership's not going to get funded with that. And then also most importantly, have some sort of bank account. A Green Dot money card, not going to work. You know, those money cards you can buy at the Kroger store or Walmart or whatever, not going to work. Find some sort of bank account. And I understand that not always with subprime market that they can have bank accounts, but you need to figure something out. Make sure that both names are on it, spouse, whatever, whoever's going to be on the car loan needs to be on it and show proof of income, because the banks may say, let's just see the statements, and that's going to save the day. It's going to make things so much easier. So, and one of the biggest scams that you have in the subprime market is the yo-yo loan. Do you know what a yo-yo loan is?
I know I should know it, but it's not coming to me right now.
What does a yo-yo do?
It bounces up and down.
Up and down, right? So when you have a yo-yo up here like this and you throw it down, and for the people listening to this, I'm making a yo-yo motion, so I think you get it. So you throw the yo-yo down, it kind of hangs down there for a second, right? You pull your hand back up and the yo-yo comes back up, right?
It's supposed to.
Maybe.
I don't think I've ever made a yo-yo actually work properly. So, you know.
So yo-yo loan is exactly that. So yo-yo loan is when the dealership gives you a car, says, congratulations, you're approved. Go tell your friends, post it on Facebook, give me a good review, blah, 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 blah. Go ahead. You're going to say something. I can tell.
Is this when they call you back and say, oh, I'm sorry, the bank did not approve you and you need a cosigner, or we need to get you in a different vehicle, or we need to do this or that, higher payment.
Interest rates changed, money down, whatever the case may be. We need more money down. We need this. Oh, hey, you know, blah, 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 blah. That is illegal. You cannot do a yo-yo loan. If they do what's called a spot delivery in most states, when you take delivery of that car, that's your car. You need to make your payments. And if that happens, you need to find out from the dealership what's going on. And I prefer it's best to do it over the phone. Yeah, sure, no problem. What can I do for you? Well, the bank called and said they need $2,000 more down. Okay. Well, why is that? You know, so now if you've done something fraudulently or not on purpose, you know, or, you know, just by accident that, you know, hey, you told them $2,000 a month and your paycheck stubs, you only owe $1,500 a month. That's not the bank. That's not the dealership's fault. It's not the bank's fault. That's your fault. What I'm talking about is blatant fraud, blatant scam from the dealership that all your documents check out. You told them everything truthful and the dealership says, oh, we need another $2,000 or we need another 5% interest or whatever the case may be. At that point, the best thing to do is to contact an attorney and say that you think that you're being part of a yo-yo scam and let that attorney handle it for you. Most importantly, that the biggest thing you need to do is make sure you get all of your documents out of the car, everything that shows that you bought the car and stuff like that. And if you have a payment due and you have not been given a payment book, you give the payment to the dealership. Hey, it looks like I'm supposed to have a 339 payment this month. I haven't received it. Who do I call? What do I do? You know, they may give you a sob story. They may threaten you. They may say, hey, we're going to repo the car, whatnot. That's some tricky situation, and you just need to get an attorney involved at that point. So you can certainly return the car and just walk back out and get your money back, but ultimately you don't want to do that, and the dealership's going to play games and, you know, whatnot. So my best advice on that yo-yo happens is definitely contact an attorney. It's extremely important to do that to protect yourself and to protect your car and, most importantly, build your credit. What do you think?
Oh, things we should have learned when we were younger.
Yeah. You're right about that for sure. And so that's one big thing too, is a lot of the stuff I talk about is what I've learned growing up, you know, that the mistakes I had. And I don't really get into too much talking about it on YouTube or the podcast here or anything like that. But, you know, I grew up with subprime family. My family's still subprime. They can't get out of that rut. I don't know what it is, you know? And that's probably my big drive, is I don't want to end up like that. I don't want to end up, you know, back in the subprime market with an 18% interest rate. I mean, I did a buy here, pay here. My very first car, I did a buy here, pay here loan, delivering pizzas for Pizza Hut. That car got wrecked. The insurance company paid it off. And I had no money down as a down payment. I lost my down payment. I got kind of screwed. It was my own fault, but nothing illegal or goofy. I just didn't get my insurance company involved, and I probably should have. And what was I doing for like the next year?
You were driving my car a lot.
Doing that, but I was walking. I was riding a bicycle back and forth to Pizza Hut, you know, not delivering pizzas anymore. I was getting tips, right? And back in the day, you know, 1996, 1998, you know, tips were big back then. And they were unreported. I think the statute of limitations is ran out on that non-reported taxable income from 1988.
you weren't even old enough to work in 1988.
Shh, don't tell them that. So a lot of that stuff comes back to, you know, just learning. And then most importantly, you know, just being in this car business for 20 years.
Well, I kind of feel like our first car we purchased together was almost like a yo-yo loan, because they spot delivered us and then turned around and called us and said, nope, we need a cosigner.
Yep.
Because we didn't have enough credit.
Yep.
And happened. Stuff. So
Matt RVs, thanks for the $10 super chat. Appreciate it. Matt's got a good channel for RV reviews. I know him well. I can't talk today.
No, you can't.
I do not know what it is.
We do have a couple people asking some actual credit questions. And there's been great conversation on the YouTube channel.
Good.
I've seen a lot of participation in questions that people are asking and we're not able to get to because of Mike's long talking.
We'll make sure everyone hits that thumbs up and shares the stream as well for added participation points.
Okay, so one of our questions says, I have been working on rebuilding my credit. I noticed my credit score varies from a low 648 to 717. Capital One shows it at 717, Experian 681, Discover 648. Some use a score 8, some score 9. What is the standard? Is there a standard? And then it continues on asking some other questions. So let's talk about, is there a standard?
So no, there isn't a standard. So sometimes people pull different credit bureaus. So this is like an in-depth conversation. Like I could do an entire video, entire vlog, entire podcast on this. There are several factors of credit bureaus. So there is an auto enhanced credit bureau. There's a mortgage enhanced credit bureau. There's a revolving debt enhanced credit bureau. There's all sorts of lending models that the FICO score uses to pull credit. So, and then sometimes the banks have their own algorithms, right? So if you get that form in the mail that shows what your credit score is, and they said, hey, we pulled an Equifax and your credit score is this, you know, that's sometimes their own internal scoring that they do as well. So it's crazy on this stuff. And that's why, again, right at the beginning of the broadcast, we talk about Credit Karma and CreditWise from Capital One and all that stuff. It's really, really important to just use that as a tool to make sure that everything's being reported right and not so much use it on a score. So because the score is probably not going to be right when the dealership pulls your credit. So with that being said, like my dealership, we may pull a credit bureau version. I'm just making this number up of 8.1. Right. And the bank may pull an 8.5 or a 7.5 or something to that effect. Right. So there's variances in there of what happens, but the good news is if you do everything right and you pay your bills correctly, those things don't come into play. They certainly can come into play now, but that's where you use this as a stepping stone. And I'll tell you this, a car loan is the absolute best way to build your credit. If you want to build your credit, do a car loan. This is going to be phenomenal. So, and even if you do have to go to a buy here, pay here place, even if you do have to go to some shady place to get on the credit bureau system, do it, but use that as a last resort, just like I said. But most importantly, just also like I said at the beginning of the broadcast, is have that money down. Banks will become blind with money down. If you have to walk, if you have to take Uber now, I didn't have Uber in 1996.
No, we didn't.
So, but you know, if you have to take the public transportation bus, do whatever it takes, you know, and Grant Cardone always says success is your duty and your obligation. And, you know, again, not that I wanted to bring this up tonight. It's great that we ad lib everything. But you know, I did this stuff. I'm talking from experience that I walked to work. I rode my bicycle in snow to work at 6 o'clock in the morning to get to work to make $10 an hour. So $400 a week because I worked 40 hours and they wouldn't let you work overtime. So it's $400 gross per week. So I've done this with a kid and you.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
So the second part of it is I'm upside down on a motorcycle loan to the tune of $8,000. And have been wanting to trade it in for a car. What are your suggestions?
So it's tough. If it's the best thing to do is get that $8,000 and pay off the motorcycle. So certainly you can sell it. If you got the cash to pay the loan off, that's fine. Do that. But you have to. It's a tough pill to swallow for that $8,000. But the biggest mistake people make is they roll that $8,000 into the next loan and they're even in a worse position. So the best thing to do is if you're in a warmer climate, you know, you can drive that bike all year round, but maybe look at you know, if you don't have a car, which I would have to assume that you don't have a car, if you have a motorcycle and you're in a warm climate, which I'm jealous of, but, you know, just sit there and do it that way, you know, but you got to pay that money off. You're obligated to pay the bank that money. And the best thing to do is sell it and get as much money as you can and pay the difference to pay the loan off. You can certainly roll some into a car, but it's not the best thing to do.
Okay, next question. My credit score is over 700. I'm paying 6.1% on a vehicle loan. No late payments. Should I be eligible to refinance after 1 year of on-time payments?
So we just did this with our daughter. So got this Corvette coming and had all these car loans on my credit report. And I was trying to knock a couple of them off and pay them off and stuff like that. 21-year-old daughter, over 800 credit score. I had problems getting her refinanced because I was on the loan originally because she has what's called a thin file. Yes, she has an 800 credit score, but she doesn't have a thick enough file for the algorithms of the banks to say, oh yeah, she's good. We won't even look at it. A human looked at it and pretty much declined credit without me being on there. So basically I knew this. I was at, where were we at, like 13 months, 12 months? Where were we at? Do you remember?
Oh, on hers?
Yeah.
Nine months.
That's what it was. I knew it was something low. So we were at 9 months and I had a lot of problems getting her financed. And luckily I got one bank to do it. And we submitted her credit probably 13 or 14 times, which goes into saying that submitting your credit that many times does not affect your score one bit. Most people think that submitting your credit over and over and over again affects your credit. It does not. I wouldn't do that to my own daughter, let alone to somebody else. But with that being said, so I said this, I was like, why am I doing this? I said, I knew I should have waited 18 months because the 18th payment, not 18 months, 18 payments is so critical to the algorithms. We don't know what the algorithms are, right? They're not giving us the algorithms. But again, that's where experience comes into play of watching how this system works and how everything plays out. When you get a new car loan or a new debt, pew, down goes your score. But once you show that you can repay that over time, that goes back up. It happened with me. My credit goes down once I put two car loans on it right away.
And you did back to back.
Back to back, right?
2 months, you know, 2 months in a row, you put two car loans on.
Yep, because I financed them for the kids. So my credit score went down, but then I just watched it go back up and I wasn't worried about it one bit. Was not an issue. And I was talking to buddy today that a friend of his went to California and charged up like $5,000 or $6,000 on a credit card that has a $12,000 limit, and his credit score dropped 155 points. So revolving debt is your worst enemy. So don't, you know, that's why I said earlier that buying a car is your best debt to raise your credit score and to get a new loan down the road. The revolving debt, the credit card debt, is the worst debt. So when people sit there and tell you, it's like, oh, just get a credit card and put something small on it, that's a big no-no. Do not do it. If you do get a credit card, just let it sit there and don't do anything. Go throw it in a drawer, forget about it, and only do something in the event that they say, hey, listen, we're going to cancel your credit card. And if you don't charge it, that's when you go out and charge something to it, put a tank of gas in your car, buy a candy bar, something, because they canceled that credit card, that hurts you as well. So it's really goofy how all this credit stuff works, all these algorithms work. And it's never ending and never revolving on everything. Another question?
I don't understand this question, but maybe you will. What is a 78% rule?
Ooh, I don't think I know that one either. Okay. I would say, so I know what a 7/8 loan is, but I don't know what a 78% rule is. I don't know. I've never heard of that. 78. Let me Google it real quick. 78% rule credit is what I'm going to, that's what I'm going to do. The rule of 7/8 is a method used by some lenders to calculate interest. Oh, I think that's what they're asking. That's okay. So I kind of said it. There's not really any 7/8 loans anymore. So, Google says the rule of 7/8 is a method used by some lenders, the keyword some, to calculate interest charges on a loan. The rule of 7/8 requires, is that what they said? The rule of 7/8, or did they say 78%?
It's written as 78%.
Okay. So the rule of 78 requires the borrower to pay a greater portion of interest on the earlier part of the loan, which decreases the potential savings for the borrower in the paying off their loan. So, in a nutshell, all of the loans that I've ever done in 20 years have been simple interest car loans, right? So simple interest car loans, your interest is calculated 365 days per year based off of your daily balance. So if I had a $400 car payment and I literally walked into the bank every day and equally spaced out $400 over 30 days, my interest would go down every single month that I would pay. That's kind of goofy. Nobody would ever do that. I'm trying to go into the extreme on that, but that's what it is. So 7/8 of, if that's what they're asking, the rule of 7/8 loan, it's not really used anymore. It was used in mortgages way back in the day. You're always going to have, interest loaded in the front of your loan, compared to at the end, because you're paying interest on a daily balance on a simple interest loan. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Next, this is not even fully a question, but it is a question. I paid my Jeep off 2 years early. Is that going to hurt me or help me?
No, I think that's only going to help you. So, you know, I think if you, had a 36-month loan, you paid it off too early, that might hurt you a little bit, but, no, paying it off early is not a big deal. So, you know, it's like,
I mean, you pay less interest if you pay it off early.
You definitely pay less interest. You show pay as agreed. So again, I think that 12 to 18 month, definitely 18 month is kind of like the trigger, that your credit score doesn't get hurt for having a loan and then closing it real quick. But no, I think you're good. Most people do car loans on 5 years and 6 years. So if you paid it off 2 years early, it's not a big deal. That happens every day. I mean, we did it. You know, you look at the Camaro. We paid the Camaro off really, really early, and it didn't affect any credit score. It actually bumped my credit up when I paid that off.
Well, and we always pay more money every month to our vehicles as it is. So, and I did see that somewhere in our comments, which I don't know where that was, but somebody did ask about paying more than your actual payment every month. And so when you pay more than your actual payment every month, somebody already responded in the comments, but what happens is the extra money goes to your principal.
Yeah.
And then in turn, your interest goes down because, like you talked about the simple interest, you sit there and have paid more money in, and they can't charge you as much interest on your principal.
Yeah. And another hack too is paying your car payments biweekly. So if you get paid every 2 weeks and you got a $400 car payment, every paycheck, send $200. You know, we all do this electronically now, right? So you can just get on your app or on the computer and send $200 to that, because over a 72 month loan, you're going to pay your car off usually 6 to 8 months quicker. Usually it's closer to the 6 or 7 months, but 6 to 8 months quicker than you would, which means that you're not going to have 8 months worth of interest or 6 months worth of interest. And then the biggest thing is not so much a scam, but I want to caution people, and my dealership does this, so it's definitely not something I'm talking bad about it. And some people, this is the best route to go, right? There are companies out there, dealerships do have companies that they will do biweekly payments for you, automatically deducted out of your checking account. Just ask questions on it. I'm not a fan of it. Not a fan of doing that at all, because I'm capable, if I wanted to do that, that I could make those payments on my own. But not everybody's thinking that way, right? So there are costs associated with doing biweekly payments when you set them at the dealership, because it's usually a third party company and they're charging you like $3 per payment. So that's $6 per month if you're doing biweekly. So just ask questions, just so you know, right? Not saying that, hey, listen, oh, you're charging me, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, if you're capable of doing it and you're going to do it and you follow through on doing it, then save yourself $6 a month times 12. So, I have public school math, so I don't know what that is, 12 times six. You have Catholic school math, maybe you can do it.
No, but that's... it's man math versus woman math.
Yes, exactly. You know. So, but yeah, so just ask that question. But biweekly payments is a huge thing. Somebody just said that they have 70 hard inquiries. There is a point where it comes in that hard inquiries do hurt you. But over, and I guess I want to explain that a little bit better, because I mentioned that earlier. When you pull credit on a car loan and I'm in there one day and they submit my credits 12 times, that counts as one pull, as long as it's done within a 30-day window. If you come in on January 1 and you pull 20, if your credit gets pulled 20 times, and you come back on February 2nd and your credit's pulled 20 more times, that's 40 pulls and it counts as two hits. So you definitely want to make sure you do that, because the reason they did that, and they changed this back in 2005, and people in 2020 still believe that when your credit is pulled, that it affects you and it hurts you. And that's the biggest misinformation that's out there, because it's unfair. When I say this, you're going to be like, oh crap, he's right. it is unfair to you or to me as a consumer to have our credit pulled multiple times so that we can shop for the best financing to save us money and have it hurt our credit score. It is very unfair. And the Fair Isaacs reporting agency, FICO, they realized that back in 2005 and took that away. So this is 15 years in the making that they did away with this being hurt.
It's pretty bad that they had to wait till 2005 to figure that out. Yes. And when you talked about that comment, I had gone back and somebody had said, asked about, is there any way you can give a dealership authorization to send only your credit or send your app to only a couple banks and not everyone? He said, I have 47 inquiries from one dealership.
Yeah. So you can do that. Like I have clients all the time that are like, hey, listen, I only finance through this credit union. We write with that credit union, right? I only want to work with this bank. So like with me, when I'm getting ready to do this Corvette loan, I'm probably just going to go through Bank of America. And that's the only place that we need to submit it. So because I'm putting in the business name and just, I know how Bank of America does on business loans and stuff like that, then there's no reason for them to submit this at multiple places to see what best interest rates is. I just kind of know already because I'm in there. But yeah, you can tell the dealership that, hey, listen, I want to shop for financing, but use your top three lenders. I don't want my credit pulled more than by three different banks. Now, typically the dealership is going to pull your credit, which is one. And then if you tell them three banks, it's four credit pulls on your credit, and that all counts as one. So you can certainly do that 100% of the time. And I get that. I get it every once in a while. You know, I don't get it a ton, but I get it every once in a while.
Okay. Well, this one's a good one. I traded in my car and the dealer took a month to settle the finance on it. Is this usual?
No, that's not usual. That's scary.
That is scary. I know our daughter was worried about that when it came to refinancing her loan. She's like, am I going to have to make two payments and everything? I was like, no, they should have it.
Yeah, handled. As a 21-year-old kid, you're really scared about that. And
yeah,
a lot of times most 20-year-old kids aren't thinking that either, but they've learned that from us. So with that being said, no, it's not normal. And you gotta be really leery about that. And if that does happen, the thing to do is find out what's taking so long. Why are they doing this? Because there are some dealerships out there that are behind on payments and they take that money and they float it. When they get paid from the bank, they float it to themselves, kind of to rob Peter to pay Paul type thing. And you've seen things about those stories, and they call it getting out of trust. That basically means that their floor plan company, the bank that holds the loans and all of their cars and inventory, they're not paying them off correctly. And that's a big red flag, showing that the dealership is out of trust with their lender and they're taking that off. So with me personally, we always get a 10-day payoff. Because that allows us to have a 10-day grace period from the day that you buy the car. Say you do it Friday night at 7 o'clock, right? There ain't no banks open for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right? And let's say Monday's a holiday, like we just had Columbus Day, right? Or President's Day. We just had President's Day. So if I do a deal on Friday night, that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I'm already 5 days in before that bank's gonna get that check on Tuesday, right? And my office is probably closed till Tuesday. So now they're not gonna get that check till Wednesday. So now we're 6 and 7 days into this. So six, seven, 10, maybe 15 days would be a grace period. But you know, if the dealership's getting a 10-day payoff, then their average paying off is less than 10 days. And now with a company called DealerTrack, that most dealerships have, I would probably say 70-80% of dealerships out there have what this company called DealerTrack. And what that is we can electronically pay banks and like pay them off in like 2 days. So say that same scenario happened. I did a deal at 7 o'clock on Friday night. So, and we have President's Day on Monday, Tuesday comes in, my back office can pay that off electronically and the bank has it like that day or maybe the next day. There's no checks, there's no mail, it's not sitting somewhere lost and they have to open up a FedEx envelope or anything like that. So makes it easy.
Gotta love technology.
Yep.
Some days. Well, it seems like we are not getting a whole lot more questions.
Text your questions in to the number on the screen or 502-909-5000. 5192.
Okay. Well, we can do this one.
Yep.
I have a C8 on order with you. And normally I do not do C8 questions, but this one actually is good. Do you think a home equity line is good because of the long term of lower payments?
Ooh, that's a great question. I love this.
Exactly. Love this. That's the only reason the C8 question got thrown in here.
So no, don't do a home equity line. A home equity line is revolving credit. So it's basically just like you're taking a credit card out and swiping it minus the interest rate. I know the home equity lines are lower interest rates. You have more flexible payments. You can pay that car off in 10 years if you wanted to, right? But say you have, I want to use a big number here. Say you have $150,000 home equity line of credit and you have an $80,000 Corvette. Now you've just taken 50% of your revolving debt on that line of credit and used it up. Your credit's going to drop real quick. So no, I'm not a big fan of it. Again, a financial guy would definitely be better to communicate with on that. But I have talked to financial guys and financial wizards in the past of not using a line of credit because reason I did that is because I was in finance. I did F&I, right? And I got paid on doing loans. I got paid on doing warranties. And I was in finance in a Cadillac store.
Oh, was I supposed to answer that?
I don't know.
I mean, I knew that. It was Cadillac, Hummer, and Saab.
Yep.
Volvo. Back when there was
Volvo.
Hummer and Saab.
So,
Volvo's still around.
Yeah, Volvo's still around. So with that, I had a lot of cash buyers. And, you know, I had to try to convert them from not paying cash. And someone would use lines of credit. And so I learned that back in 2004, 2002, 2003. When I was in finance at the Cadillac Saab Volvo Hummer dealership, and I learned a lot from that. So I did get that response from a financial guy that not to use a home equity line of credit, but ask your advisor and they can tell you the right way to do it.
And I do remember from last Tuesday night's show, we did have a question regarding what a good score would be to buy a C8. So what kind of credit score do you need to be buying a $75,000, $80,000, $90,000 vehicle?
Yeah, and that reminds me. I don't know where I saw this at. I get so many messages per day. I mean, I get, you know, if people realize I get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of messages. I can't count how many messages I get per day from people, and I can't answer them all, which sucks because I do want to answer them all, and I hate ignoring people, but I'm one person. So I think to answer that question, 720 and above credit score. You know, you got 650. I'm not going to say don't buy a Corvette. That'd be dumb of me, but you got to be all the stuff I just told you. You got to be on it. You got to know, you got to understand, you got to come in with some intelligence into this, right? Why is your credit score 650? Okay. Is it because you have revolving debt? Okay. No problem. If you're paying your bills on time and you got a 650 and you got a bunch of revolving debt, you might have a little bit higher interest rate. So be ready for a little bit higher payment. So just, you know, that goes with that. But I had a, with all this said, it triggered me on a comment that I saw somewhere on social media, that someone hit me up that, hey, he's just getting done, with bankruptcy and he wants to buy a C8 and wants to know if he can buy it from me. And, as soon as I was reading that, I took somebody called in and I took a phone call and then I just lost my mind until now. And like that person doesn't need to be buying a C8. That they need to do exactly what I've said, all my notes that I have here about the being open-minded. Everybody wants a Corvette. Everybody in this world wants a Corvette, especially at $60,000.
Well, maybe not a Corvette.
But let's buy a Chevy Cruze or a Chevy Malibu and get our credit back up and then go after that. Then go after that car. That's what being open-minded is about. You want the Corvette, but you have to go to a Chevy Cruze. That's being open-minded and that's being thinking with your head, and you're like, I'm going to put my stuff before my wants and needs. I'm going to put my priorities first.
Here's a good one. Just bought a house. Should I buy a new car before mortgage shows in credit?
Ooh, that's a good hack. We had someone that we know, get a repossession on their car, and they went down the day the car got repossessed and got financed, on a car before that repossession showed up on their credit report. So, but yeah, I mean, that's a good hack to do. You certainly can do it. Finance, get your mortgage done. Because you know, these mortgage lenders, they're all like, don't touch your credit, don't do anything, stuff like that. And then, go down that day, you know, 15 days, 10 days and, you know, get a car and your credit will be up, but you're going to take two big hits. You're adding a mortgage to your credit report. But if you're paying a mortgage off, it's kind of like a 50-50 split, that you're adding debt and losing debt, and then you're just adding more debt. So yeah, it's a good hack. You can definitely kill that.
But definitely you don't want to buy a car before you sign on the dotted line for that mortgage.
Right. Yeah. Every mortgage lender will tell you not to to buy something. But I do have a one more thing. I was talking about the trade-in scam earlier. You gotta realize that you need to pay 60% of this loan off, 70% of this loan off before you decide to trade. I know I said that earlier, but I just want to emphasize that, because that is a big scam that dealerships pull with dealers out, or with customers out there. It's like, oh, just get this now and come back and see me in a year. You can't do that. It's not going to happen and it doesn't matter if you pay 60 or 70% of that car loan off in 6 months or 60 months, right? I'm not telling you a month time. I'm telling you percentage time. Once you get to that. And the best thing to do is just kind of look at trade-in value. Most people trade. Trading's so easy and so nice to do. Yes, you take a hit on what you could get for retail, but most states give you a tax credit. And with my dealership on new cars, I'm giving you a rebate to purchase a car or trade your car in. So you're going to pay more money for a vehicle if you don't trade it in. So you have to look at it case by case basis. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we have to look at every single one case by case basis. There's nothing set in stone here. But you just have to go into it and whatnot. And, I have the How to Buy a Car group. Oh, excuse me. I changed the name.
Beyond the Showroom.
Yes, Beyond the Showroom Facebook group. And that is a great resource to go in there and ask questions. And we help everyone out. It's a great thing. And I tell people, I was like, I don't really want people to get personal in there with their credit and stuff like that. But at the same time, I think everybody's in there. They're being ethical. They're being professional. We're not in there to make fun of somebody's situation. We're not going to be, condescending to anybody. We're going to be professional about everything. But the Beyond the Showroom Facebook group, me and her are the only moderators of that group. And I keep it classy and I keep it going good. Really, there's no car salespeople in there because I don't want people going in there to pitch people. I don't want people to go in there and DM them and say, hey, listen, you want to buy a car? I see you're in the market for a car. I want that group to be all about, this is what I'm thinking. This is the research I'm doing. Can anybody pull a Carfax for me? Whatever the case may be. I really don't want to get into pulling Carfaxes or invoices. That's kind of a car dealership thing. But, that's what that group is all about, is to help you buy a car, to make it easy for you. How to buy, I said it again.
It's not how to buy a car.
It used to be named How to Buy a Car. but Beyond the Showroom is the Facebook group name. So for the podcast, let's do one more question. So make it a good one.
Oh, great. I was only looking at one specific question. Now I have to look at
make it that question.
Well, somebody was asking you to discuss the thin credit files a little bit more.
Oh, perfect. That's a great one to end the podcast on.
It basically says, I'm about to apply for my first loan, less than $15,000. I've had a couple credit cards for 3+ years and believe my score is 750 or higher. Will this be a problem getting approved?
Based off that, providing that you don't have any or much credit on those cards, then you probably do have a 750 or 800 credit score when you pull an auto loan. So $15,000 car, walking in to the dealership. So when we go $15,000 car, and I'm just going to use 6% interest or 6% sales tax, and then I'm going to add $500 for miscellaneous fees, dealer doc fee, title fee, stuff like that, because every state's different. That means you're going in at $16,400 out the door. So with $16,400 out the door, 20% down is $3,200, right? Am I right? $16,400 times point.
You have to do the math there.
$3,200. Yep. So, if you're walking in, how much money did they say they were putting down?
Didn't say how much money to put down. Say it was going to be like a $15,000 loan. Yeah.
So you walk into that car dealership with $4,000 down, $5,000 down, you're probably going to get approved. Again, everything is case by case. I can't sit here and go off of that question and say, yep, you'll get approved, or nope, you won't. But I know the odds, and a thin file does hurt you in a way. If you can get a cosigner, that's going to be awesome. Cosigners help out a ton. And with a cosigner, both get equal credit. Not one gets more or less. It's 100% for both parties involved. So if you pay your bills on time, your cosigner gets credit for it. If you don't pay your bills on time, your cosigner gets credit for it, and you're going to probably not have a really happy cosigner. So cosigner is always going to help out with that too. But yeah, going in on a $15,000 car, if you could have $5,000 down, dude, I'm telling you, when the banks look at that, they're going to be like, not a problem at all, based off of the information there.
Yes. And a message came in saying it's going to be $15,000 out the door, $7,000 trade as a down payment.
Oh, sweet. You'll be golden. So. You'll be golden. I bet you'll be fine with that information. So appreciate that going up. So for the audio listeners, every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. on the Chevy Dude YouTube channel, we will be live and you can ask these questions. You can text these questions in during the week at 502-909-5192. It's down in the description of the podcasting portion of this. As always, guys, thanks again for watching. Have a great day and drive safely.
Beyond the Showroom is on the socials. Follow along on Twitter at Chevy Dude. Join the Beyond the Showroom Facebook group by searching Beyond the Showroom. Subscribe to the Chevy Dude YouTube channel. And until next time, have a great day and drive safely.